How do you do, ladies and gentlemen? This is Don Dana, Graco's Hollywood columnist, bringing you your motion picture column of the air. There is little doubt, regardless of honeyed stories to the contrary, that this Southern California of ours, in which lies the motion picture center of the world, is strange and sometimes inhospitable. When a playwright or promising actress or sensational novelist comes to Hollywood and signs a contract with a motion picture studio for more money than he or she has ever seen before, statements are immediately issued to the newspapers that the newcomer finds Hollywood a veritable dream city, that the people are unbelievably kind, and that the climate and surrounding country is the most perfect and beautiful to be seen. All know by this time that Southern California is one of the resorts of the world, so remarks about the climate and scenery are a trifle superfluous, and the kindness of the people is something which should be taken with a large grain of salt. Actors and actresses since the beginning of the profession have been known for their sentimentality and generosity, but regardless of this, Hollywood is a conglomeration of kindness, cruelty, and fame and oblivion. By the very nature of its geographical contour spread for 50 miles all over the map, Hollywood and its suburbs make for a large list of acquaintances and few number of friends. Artists are notoriously sensitive and temperamental, if you will, and even the most famous, those whose names are known in every corner of the globe, find at times a stiff upper lip a necessity amidst the hodgepodge of cynicism, hypocrisy, and sink-or-you'll-swim attitude. A very famous actress told this columnist that she was miserably unhappy most of the time in Hollywood. A certain male star, who at the present time is among the public's first favorites, lives practically in seclusion, counts his dollars carefully, and for public approval smiles his let-the-devil-worry smile whenever necessary. But he's waiting for the first flicker of a sign that his star is beginning to wane, and then he's leaving the dream city to other seekers after fame and fortune. And now the news comes that Marie Chevalier has torn up his contract with his studio and is returning to France as soon as possible. The studio says that it's only for a vacation, but it's no secret that the impressionable Frenchman at times wishes he had never crossed the ocean to seek his fortune in America. And newspaper headlines carry the story that Helen Hayes is through with motion pictures. And back in New York, Miss Hayes told reporters that she would stick to the stage hereafter. There is such a thing as making too much money, the small magnetic actress said. And one wonders what answer will be made to this statement by those who claim that only those who fail in Hollywood return home to jeer. Few have made a more brilliant success in pictures than Helen Hayes. More or less amusing is the reply the glamorous Tallulah Bankhead made when questioned about Miss Hayes' remark concerning money. It said the sophisticated and aristocratic congressman's daughter, "As for there being such a thing as too much money, I wouldn't know about that." All of which makes Hollywood the unpredictable Hollywood it is. Unpredictable, ever-changing, fascinating. It's possible to be too famous, as more than one person has learned before. His Majesty King George V of England will make public on his birthday this coming June the honor list, by which His Majesty rewards those outstanding men of the year with such titles of knighthood and nobility as Sir and Baron. The King, being only human, likes the list to come as a complete surprise. And so when newspapers and the public begin to say, with a great deal of noise, that some prominent man is sure to be knighted this year, you can with some certainty wager that if the man's name was ever a prospect for the list, the publicity had taken away that chance. And so it is with George Arliss. Those who are up on such matters of the royal policy will tell you that there's been too much hubbub about the whole matter, that in their opinion, the distinguished Mr. Arliss will not be a knight this year. But of course, there's always a chance. And if it's not Sir George Arliss this year, the king, it is hoped, will always have other birthdays. In Mascot's new production, Behind the Green Lights, Sidney Blackmer, the male lead, wears the latest Graco shirts and endlock ties. Watch for the showing of Behind the Green Lights in your city, and watch for the display of Graco's latest styles in men's shirts and ties at your favorite men's store. Every Graco styled in Hollywood shirt and endlock tie carries the Graco label. The producers and bigwigs of the film industry, those who make money year in and year out while film stars come and go, are looking with longing eyes at the newest gold mine, which producer Walter Wanger has discovered. The gold mine is a man, and it, or he, is under contract to the brilliant Mr. Wanger. His name is Charles Boyer, and you couldn't get even money in Hollywood that he won't be a matinee idol in a few short months. Now, Mr. Boyer was born in France some 35 years ago, and at 22 he was one of that country's ranking favorites. About a year ago he came to the United States and made a picture called Caravan. Perhaps you remember it. And Mr. Boyer thought the picture was terrible, and he brought up his own account and returned to his native land, where he said he intended to remain forever. But Mr. Wanger talked him into coming over for one more try. He made the picture Private Worlds, And as a result of the public's enthusiastic reception, is literally and figuratively worth his weight in gold to producer Wanger. At present, RKO has him cast opposite Katharine Hepburn in Break of Hearts. It looks as if 1935 will find a lot of old favorites out and a lot of new favorites in, because there's only so much room at the top. And speaking of those who have clicked lately, it is time this columnist made some mention of the suave Tullio Carminati, whose role as the leading man in the Grace Moore picture One Night of Love made him a sensational success overnight. Now, this despite the fact that Mr. Carminati, or Count Carminati, as his title goes, has been on the stage and in motion pictures for many years. He ran away from his home in Italy when he was 15 years old to go on the stage. His father promptly disinherited him. And then Count Tullio Carminati did some plain and fancy starving. But when he was 22, his great chance came. The classic Duse made him her leading man. And since then, tall, handsome Tullio Carminati has been a great favorite in Europe. But it has only been in the last year that Americans have boosted him to the top. At present, the Italian Count is making a picture with opera star Mary Ellis called Paris in Spring. One more contestant for that topmost step on the ladder of screen success. The announcement from Universal Studios that they intend to make a motion picture out of Edgar Allan Poe's unusual poem, The Raven, leaves many a motion picture columnist slightly perplexed. Just how a motion picture could be built around a poem is something difficult to imagine. And then when they pick such a piece of work as The Raven, they are definitely courting danger from some thousands of Poe fans throughout the country. It seems to this columnist that whatever they do will be wrong as far as someone is concerned. But perhaps to progress in any shape or form, some strong man or studio must always lead the way. It was at a theater in Beverly Hills the other night. The house lights had just been turned on at the end of the first show, and people began to move up the aisles and out the doors. Behind this columnist were seated two young ladies about 18 or 19 years of age. "Wasn't Joan Crawford beautiful?" one girl asked her companion. The other took her time about replying. "Yes," she sighed, "and I think Robert Montgomery is marvelous." A silence for a moment, and then the second continued. "You know, I wish I could see what people were like in say, 30 years from now. I wonder if they'd be poor or rich, living in mansions or in shacks. I wonder what Robert Montgomery will look like when he's 60 years old. I wonder if he'll be sick and down and out." For a moment, she ceased speaking and was plainly thinking. Suddenly, she began to speak again, but this time her voice was low and there was a catch in her throat. "No, I don't wish that either. I don't want to see what they're like when they're old. Why, they might be hungry and poor." "Here, have a piece of candy," her less emotional companion offered, and the conversation was closed. For some reason, nevertheless, that one-sided conversation stuck in this listener's mind. When the lights went out and the show recommenced, it made little impression on your columnist. Superimposed in the brain over any stimulation from the screen were visions of the newsboys outside the theater, screaming at the top of their lungs, "Film star arrested for jewel robbery." And in a little print at the end of the long article, which told how this former motion picture star of Silent Days had been tracked down by Scotland Yard and detectives of America, were the words. The prisoner said to one of the detectives when arrested, "What can you do when your luck is gone?" Then the last sentence in the story. Since the event of talking pictures, however, the star has appeared in few films. It may be that the young lady munching chocolates in the seat behind was as wise when she changed her mind about her wish as ever was King Solomon. Since the success of the Charles Dickens stories on the screen, of Little Women, Lives of a Bengal Lancer, and others, no story today is too ethereal or too unusual for the Hollywood film moguls to consider producing. Now they're to make The Garden of Allah, that story of a monk in a monastery in the Sahara Desert who falls in love with a beautiful English woman and consequently renounces his faith to be with her. And Joan Crawford is to play the part of the English woman. There's courage in Miss Crawford's acceptance of the role. It's a part that takes acting, and that of the highest order. It would be so much easier to turn it down and not put herself under fire. But she's accepted, so we're to see a new Joan Crawford, one whose expressions and gestures and words will make or break a picture. South of Los Angeles, some half a dozen hundreds of miles in Lower California, in the sleepy little Mexican seaside town of La Paz. And not so long ago, on a barren island, a few miles out in the ocean from La Paz, a ragged Mexican boy digging in the sand to build a fire found a heavy chest. And in the heavy chest were piled hundreds of golden, shining Spanish pieces of eight. The boy ran along the beach shouting for his friends to come and see what he had found, which in itself is some kind of a commentary upon his trusting honesty. To make a long story short, the chest was found to contain about 4 million pesos worth of gold, or about $2 million in American money. And $2 million is news in any man's newspaper. So the newspapers of the world carried the story of the find. People marveled over the breakfast table at such luck and, for the most part, promptly forgot the story. But what about our little Mexican boy? Well, the Mexican government claimed a goodly share of his pirate's treasure. A company in Canada promptly attached the gold, saying that they owned the island. The men who carried the treasure have claims. The city of La Paz is wondering what they can do about it. And, of course, there being no one to protect a little Mexican boy, there is little likelihood that he will see more than a few of the golden pieces of eight. But there is always Hollywood. Hollywood would surely employ a boy who had found a rich pirate's treasure, and so the scene is the writer's building of a Hollywood studio. Is anything to be done about this natural drama at Hollywood's very back door, your columnist asks. Not at this studio, the scenario writer answers. You see, he continues, the bosses say that people wouldn't believe it. It's too fake. It's not real enough. It's real, I mean, but who'd believe anything about buried treasure? No, people will believe plausible fiction, but not implausible truth. So, little Mexican boy, Hollywood has said no. But don't worry, all things have their compensation. And you'll probably never know how lucky you are that they took your money and that Hollywood doesn't want you. And that, ladies and gentlemen, concludes this day's Gollum. I'll see you later.
Now the makers of Graco shirts and endlock ties have an attractive offer for the ladies. In making neckties, silk scraps are accumulated. These are approximately 4 inches square and are ideal for making quilts, pillow tops, and numerous other needlework articles. Here is how you can get them. Visit the store of the Graco dealer sponsoring this program. Purchase a Graco endlock tie. Remove the paper band. Send it together with 10 cents in stamps to cover the cost of packing and mailing. And mail it to Graco, spelled G-R-A-Y-C-O, Hollywood, California. And a generous package of 30 to 40 beautiful silk pieces will be mailed to you. Just remember, Graco, Hollywood, California. You have been listening to Don Dana's motion picture column of the air.